Stories from California Cattle Country is produced by the California Cattlemen's Foundation and receives support from the California Cattle Council. We've created this podcast for those wanting to connect with the people and practices of far-flung ranches and dairies in California through hearing stories from and learning more about the families in cattle country. Here's another quick tangent. Photographer's tip. Read the room. I've been taking pictures professionally for a long time. I even shot on celluloid film for a few years, and not because it was old-timey, so like that long. People in public, for the most part, don't want their picture taken. I know I don't. As a photographer, you learn over time that it's best to maintain a low profile, so you avoid long lenses, flashes, and other accessories if possible. I even eschew the strap and hold the camera at my side. Anyway, years ago I was taking pictures at dive bars for a food magazine and went to the Windowless Flame Club in Sacramento to secure a picture of the Black Superman. It's a drink that's like a freaky version of a Long Island iced tea with Chambord and Blue Curacao. It's served in a pint glass. Though the rider who accompanied me prearranged the shoot with the bartender, the owner of the establishment was unaware. The Flame Club is definitely not the sort of place to be pointing a camera around in, especially during the day. My intent was to take a single photograph and put the camera away. The owner, who was seated at the bar, saw the camera come out of my bag and immediately asked us to leave. And then, I was 86th from the Flame Club, which was a first for me. I mention this because at times, especially when unintroduced, a camera at a ranch, or in this case in a cattle auction, can be cause for concern for some. To be clear, the auctions I've been to have been lovely. Cattle auctions are akin to like a grand central station of ranching. They're fast-paced, efficient, and complex. The animals enter an arena on one side, are auctioned in under a minute, and exit on the opposite side. To the uninitiated, the process can seem hectic or maybe hurried. I doubt the cattle enjoy the experience any more than I like going through the TSA line, but great care is taken in their comfort. When I visited Cindy Tu's place, the Fresno Livestock Commission, another animal auction house, I think it was season 2, episode 20, if you want to go back and listen to it, I entered the auction and pulled out a camera, and the auctioneer abruptly ended his chant and asked me what I was doing. I said I was there to talk to Cindy, and he immediately directed me to the office. Now, it's not born of paranoia. There have been instances where overzealous, and that's my word, environmental groups have infiltrated these operations in an attempt to create content or chaos. Now, really, it's all about perception. I'm still working on the shorthand, but this is what I know. Animal care is paramount to all involved. It's as important for business reasons as it is for just not being a jerk. Stressed animals don't put on weight. It's that simple. Now, it's true that some of the animals are going to eventually be processed and packed. After all, this is animal agriculture. Over the last few years, I've had my eyes on the processes and practices that bring beef to market. What I have seen are content animals, hardworking individuals who care about the land and said animals, and a lifestyle or legacy that faces complex issues in weather and regulations, attrition, fire, etc. As I've mentioned before, the subjects of the interviews and my questions are not stipulated by my superiors. I get to poke around. I've had exactly one edited podcast in over 50 episodes. If you're curious about these operations, even if you're dubious, you can reach out to me at ryan@cowcattle.org. I think many people would be surprised about the candidness and hospitality of the people in the industry. I know I am. Perhaps you can even come along on the next trip. In this episode, we speak with Jake Parnell, owner of the Cattlemen's Livestock Market in Galt, California, which is 20 miles south of Sacramento, about the livestock market, common misconceptions, and why communication is critical between the ag and non-ag community. I'm Ryan Donahue, and this is Stories from California Cattle Country.
My name is Jake Parnell, and we own, my wife and I, Molly, and our three kids, Jack, Ben, and Parker, own Cattlemen's Livestock Market in Galt, California. We're one of probably the larger sale yards, just mainly selling feeder cattle in Northern California, and also in Western Nevada and Southern Oregon. We also represent quite a few cattle on Western Video Market, and just kind of do our part for the California cattle industry.
You're also an auctioneer, which is a very unique kind of talent. Given that, you're able to participate in various fundraising operations and stuff. And then, but you've also created your own nonprofit additionally. Can you just explain that just a little bit?
Yeah, I can do all of that. Yeah. So, I mean, obviously my specialty here on Wednesdays, I don't know if you call it that, but what I do on Wednesdays is auctioneer at the livestock market here. But then I have built quite a few other businesses outside. I sell you know, 30 or 40 purebred, either Angus cattle or horse sales a year all around the country. I sell probably 40 or 50 big charity and benefit auctions as well, including for guys like Tiger Woods and his foundation and the Crocker Art Museum, most of the private high schools around and schools around Sacramento and that. And then during COVID, we created the California Youth Ag Expo, which we originally created to take the place of the fairs that first year when COVID hit and they canceled all the fairs, and wanted it to be kind of an outlet for these kids that maybe don't specialize or only, you know, go to sporting events or do some of that, that had basically taken on these projects and were so used to that social crowd, that the important, you know, social aspect of livestock showing or anything we do, and give them a place to go show. And so we made it happen that first year during COVID, and have been really blessed that that nonprofit has taken off. It's turned into kind of one of the premier events in the Western United States. It turned just from a livestock show into including public speaking. It includes ag mechanics as well as a job interview contest outside of just the livestock this year. And, you know, 4 years in, we're 4 years down, and we're pretty proud that we've already given over $1 million straight back to kids. There's no overhead cap. There's nothing else except just giving back to California's ag youth. This state is such a dynamic, important part of not only the United States agriculture industry, but to feeding the world. And so many of our good kids have gotten discouraged by politics and other factors that have kind of taken over in California, that they forgot that south of us here in Gaul is the most fertile region this world's ever going to know. And there's more technology here to farm and do good things than there ever is. And all these kids are leaving and going to school in other places because they want out. And unfortunately, once they get out and they get to a Texas or an Oklahoma or a Kansas and they experience those great schools and those ag programs, a lot of times they don't come back for many different reasons. And so we've tried to create a force that offers and tries to retain these good young people in California. And all the scholarships used from the Youth Expo are only to be used at California universities, California trade schools. It's not just university level, junior colleges, whatever it might be. So we're trying to keep good kids in California. There's not a lot of people that want to move to California. We got to keep the good ones here because there's a lot of important things we do in California agriculture.
This podcast, typically we visit cow-calf operations 95% of the time. I've been to a few dairies, and like I said, I've been to 2 or 3 auctions. Can you explain what this sector is, what happens, where these animals come from, and where they're going, and why?
Yeah, we're a mechanism for the smaller producers. A lot of people don't realize that the average cow-calf producer in California is probably under 40, maybe even under 30 head per producer. And when you're that small, you can't just sell your calves privately and send them to a feedlot where most of the feedlots are in the middle part of this country and sell them because of freight and other factors. So we offer an outlet every Wednesday for cattlemen throughout Northern California or kind of throughout California, Western Nevada, Southern Oregon, to consign their cattle to us. We sort those cattle up and we kind of serve as the broker in sending those cattle to feeders and feedlots throughout the United States. Our main customer base is obviously in the Northwest and, you know, Colorado, Wyoming, feedlots that are closer to us, because a lot of what we do is can end up being regional because of freight costs and everything else. But we are just merely that connection between the California cattle producer, helping them, selling cattle at auction, trying to get top dollar, and sending them to feedlots.
The operation obviously has been going on for quite a while. You could see that the levers and everything are like well worn, and like, you know, it's like a really, really old burger spot or something like that, if that makes any sense. Like, it's just, it's a very, very efficient. And the amount of animals that you guys move, like, I was thinking, it's like, if I have to take my dog to the vet, that's like an all day thing. And you guys, I watched hundreds and hundreds of animals move through peacefully and efficiently. Can you just tell me like what the process is? Because there's, you know, 4 people up there or 3 people. Where the auctioneer is, what are their roles and what do they do? Like, what is, if you just run me through the process real quick.
Yeah. So up there, obviously there is 4 actually. There's the guy that stands there and operates the hydraulic gate. So he's letting cattle in and letting cattle out based on, you know, whether they're sold or not, or when they need to be sold, or whether they need to be sorted. Sitting next to him is the auctioneer. And obviously they're doing the transaction. Next to the auctioneer is our clerk. And so she's inputting everything is weighed digitally on our ring scale. So a lot of yards don't have what we have, but in our ring is an actual scale. So when that animal walks in there, our scale pops up and our computer grabs that weight. And then you see it on the board out front, it pops up on that TV. So it shows the guys how many head, total weight, and the average weight. Then next to him, because we are a larger operation, we do have a fourth person up there. And what they do is they're pinning the cattle, probably the hardest job in the yard. They're keeping all the buyer's cattle separate by order number that they go on and by buyer name. And so she's working with, you know, 40 to 50 pins outside and keeping track of where these cattle go afterwards. And we always joke around, they get the least credit over there, but it's probably by far the hardest job because it requires the most concentration, the most detail, and the consequences of messing up later on when we're trying to sort these cattle apart, if they're pinned wrong or something, you know, comes back more on them. So I'll say that. I'll also say about our staff and what we do at livestock markets, we are extremely in tune with the safety and the proper operation of these facilities and the safe handling of these animals. And so our staff goes through extensive animal handling training. We try to do our very best to provide the lowest stress environment for those cattle that we can, for a number of reasons. First of all, they're being sold by weight. So the more that they're stressed and the more weight they lose while they're here takes money out of my cattleman's pocket, which in turn takes my money out of our pocket because we work on commish. So I always tell guys, the more money you make, the more we make. That's our incentive to do our best for you. And so my whole crew is very in tune to that. And we all do our very best to operate to the best of our ability, the safest and most efficiently we can.
When I got in there and I asked if I could put a camera up just to get, you know, the animals going through, and you kind of said, well, yeah, I want to review it first. You know, we kind of get our asses handed to us by, you know, environmental groups and stuff. I've visited over 50 ranches and I have not seen, I've seen happy animals every single time. And I didn't come from ag. This is just my pure perspective. But are there some common misconceptions that you think people may have about the process or about how the animals are handled or something like that? Because I know people anthropomorphize animals all the time. So, and they think that, you know, they're just like humans. They're not. Like, these are prey animals, right? So they have a natural fear of a lot of stuff. And so it takes even more careful handling. But would you say, is there anything you'd want to address?
I've said this, I've said it from every level in local and state government, and I've testified in front of the United States Senate about these exact issues. And I will tell you that there are no better environmentalists than farmers and ranchers, and there are no better or more concerned people about animal welfare than ranchers who make their entire living off of those animals. And so the fact that there are environmental and animal rights groups led by the Humane Society mainly out there that try to put a bad name on what we do or on what dairying does, it's very unfortunate because, yes, we do make our living off those animals. And yes, unfortunately, or fortunately for some of us, yes, they do. Some of them end up at a feedlot and ultimately slaughtered for the food that we eat. But, you know, that's also the purpose, like you said, of what some of these animals are here for. When you only need one bull to breed 25 cows, there's some other spot for those other 24 that don't go on as being a breeding bull. And a lot of people don't understand that. And so when you're in an environment like we do, we're constantly watching the groups coming in. We know that the Humane Society and other groups have made us one of their key objectives to go out and get. You can review it on the website, Dairy Sale Yard. They aren't fans of what we do. And so we're careful. We're also not opposed to talking with these people and trying to teach them. Some of the greatest lessons we've learned, and you know, I tell the story often about water quality. We got called into a water meeting, and we're going to turn sale yards into feedlots and put them on this new water quality program. And I sat there this whole meeting and told them what we did. At the end, I said, I want you to come see what we do. Because a lot of people don't understand it. They say, oh, Cattleman's Livestock Market runs 120,000 head of cattle a year through here. They must have cattle there all the time. What you saw today is exactly what we do. They get dropped off on Monday, Tuesday. By tomorrow afternoon, there will be nothing left here that's sold today. These cattle come, it's a transit facility. So I brought the water quality board out. I told them to pick the muddiest, rainiest day they could see so they could see exactly what our place looked like when it was muddy, when it was dirty, when there was standing water, so they could see how our water drainage system works and everything. And from that meeting, we got our own kind of code in the water quality board through the Central Valley Water Board, our own way of regulating ourselves, because they realize we aren't a feedlot. Cattle come and go. There's very few that are left here. And so I think sometimes the biggest thing we do in the agriculture industry, not just in sale yards, is we don't tell our story enough. And you're here to do that, and I appreciate that, because I think telling this story is so important. I'll go off on a tangent, but sure. I mean, I've said numerous times that I truly believe the biggest national security issue we have in this country is our food supply. The day that we continue to turn off water in California, the day that we can't feed our people, the day that one of our wives or our mothers or us ourselves go to a store and either can't get food or gets cheaper food from another country that isn't safe, that's got bugs in it, or that's been treated with pesticides that aren't approved in our country or something like that, is the day that it's too late to actually fix what's going on. I think it's so important that our industry tells their story. I think it's so important that we show these groups that, you know, yeah, we may not do exactly what you think we need to do with the animals, but you also don't understand their behavioral issues. You also don't understand, you don't spend your life feeding these, you know. Growing up, until I met my wife, I never took a vacation until I was 23 or 24 years old because you still, at home on the ranch, you still had to feed cows on Christmas Day. You didn't get to do this. We'd go away on a Monday to a lake in the summer or go skiing a day or here and there, but it's not the normal life that every American lives. And I love the life, but we do need to do a better job telling our story, doing what you're here to do.
Just like a ranch, this is also kind of a legacy operation, and you made the decision to take over from what was the Loretz family?
Yeah, I ran this in 2007. Frank, they call him Butch, Loretz, hired me to run the company. He opened it in 1968, him and his dad. I think he took full ownership from his family in 1978 or 9, I believe. But we celebrated our 50th anniversary and kind of started to negotiate 5 years ago on, you know, where it would fall and, you know, how we could get this land, obviously being right on the side of Highway 99, make it all make sense financially. And I was lucky enough in March that we finally made the transition. So I went from managing it for 16 years to we own it ourselves now. And he was the guy you probably didn't notice him in there. We should have got a picture of him, but he was the guy sitting in the front row that I was talking to, right? When you walked in, I got up and talked to you. That's Frank Loretz, and a big mentor of mine, still helps. He still buys all the hay for this yard. It's one of his kind of passions. And so he's still very involved. He just doesn't outright own it anymore.
You know, you are an auctioneer, and that is a very specific kind of skill set. I don't know. Can you explain to how you got into it, whether you were professionally taught or self-taught, or how that came about?
Absolutely. My grandfather, Jack, was one of the more famous Angus cattle auctioneers ever in the late 60s through the 70s and into the early 80s. And he just passed away this spring. And we just had a tribute to him. And Angus cattle people in particular from all over the country turned up at his celebration of life. But he was an auctioneer and kind of entrepreneur, a little bit wired like me. My dad also works in the auction business. He sells cars and sells a lot of benefit auctions as well. I went to work out of Cal Poly. I spent an extra year at Cal Poly as their student body president and was kind of looking for a job. And that's right when Governor Schwarzenegger won the recall against Governor Davis and got an opportunity to go work in politics, which is where I met my wife, working in the horseshoe in Governor Schwarzenegger's office. And kind of 2 years in, I realized that maybe politics wasn't for me at that time, at least, you know, non-elected or, you know, staff politics. And so I had the opportunity to go to work for a company called Cargill and spent a year there before Butch gave me the job, the opportunity to come work here. I had gone to auction school at the World Champion School of Auctioneering. Max Oliveira, who owns Turlock Livestock, at the time Jim Pennington, who owned Formosa Livestock down in Bakersfield, Ralph Wade, one of the most famous auctioneers ever, they were the coaches of this school. And so they teach you kind of the main chant part, which is what their school is focused on. There are auction schools all over the country, and you can spend 2-3 weeks there learning the business. I'd grown up in it. I've got a business degree from Cal Poly. I probably didn't need to learn that side as much as just how to purely auctioneer. From there, you take what they learn and you practice, and you kind of develop your own style, and I think you do
like
that.
Like at home by yourself, in the shower kind of a thing?
It always sounds better in the shower, doesn't it? Yeah, absolutely. In the shower, in the car, you know, it kind of depends where. Oftentimes for me, it depends what kind of event I'm going to, because as you can imagine, the speed that you see today in the auction champ probably won't work this Saturday night at St. John's at their big charity auction in the Mather Airport in front of 1,000 people. You probably have a different style. And so I find myself on the way to that auction that day, you know, kind of going through how it's going to sound that night. That's probably why I'm not, you know, exceptional at either the livestock side or the charity side, any of those. I kind of have a little bit of everything and kind of a jack of all trades that way. That's how I do it for myself.
from what I understand, there's chants and there's also filler words, and then a lot of times the filler words are something that somebody, that's their own kind of riff or their own little style. Like, do you have a specific?
I don't even know that I could tell you a filler word. I mean, the way we were taught is dollar bid now, and you hear that come out once in a while, and that's kind of rolling dollar bid now altogether. I don't really use that. It just doesn't fit with my style anymore. Able to buy them at, able to bid them at, bid here, buy here. I mean, you'll hear it taught all different ways, and everybody has their different style. I honestly don't even concentrate on my filler words. A lot of times what you won't hear is us saying, we'll be talking to the guy in the ring or the people next to us, and a lot of the folks around won't even hear it. Or talking to the buyers, you'd probably notice in there a few times they'd start laughing or something. You know, sometimes that's something I say to them, you know, in the auction chant that they catch, the general public maybe.
Okay, you called me out and you said, oh, you can come back here, Ryan.
Yeah, I said that right in the auction chat. You kind of heard your name, but if I would have said that, you probably would have never realized I was talking to you. And so there's all kinds of, you know, that goes on. You know, we're pretty lucky. We've got, I think, 5 world champions that came from California. I've never gone and compete. Or I did, excuse me. I've only competed once in the LMA's World Livestock Auctioneer Championship. I was lucky enough to win the interview part of it, and I made the top 10. But when you start comparing, you know, our talents to some of those guys, it's, you know, it's a little different. They really specialize in cattle and do a great job.
Awesome. Well, I want to thank you for allowing me to come out here and giving me access to all this stuff.
So Livestock Marketing Association is our trade organization, 830 member markets around the country. And we realize that, you know, we're a fairly well-to-do trade organization. Not only do we represent our livestock markets, we own our insurance companies. And we realize that we're probably the voice of producers around the country. You know, there's the NCBA and there's the California Cattlemen's Association and all these great organizations, but there's very few of them that see as many folks as an auction yard operator does on a daily basis. So we decided to do this listening tour, and we flew around the country, went to 6 or 7 different spots, brought very diverse groups of ranchers in, grass-fed beef guys, guys that ranched and farmed, guys that just ranch, guys that just run yearlings. We brought them all in a room and tried to talk to them about where's the longevity of this business. Especially you can see around me, when you drove in here, you saw all trees and grapes. There's very few cattle next to me. And rural America in California is kind of gone. And it was really interesting to us that it came back to, we've got to do a better job telling our story because what we do is so important. And that was from Alabama to Kansas to Montana, 2 meetings in California, a meeting in Missouri. It all came back to, we've got to do a better job telling our story. We need opportunities like this to show what we do, show the good in what we do. And I think we just really, truly appreciate what, you know, the California Cattlemen's Association is doing this. And I hope that folks in California or wherever they're listening realize how wholesome the agriculture industry is and how important rural America and farmers and ranchers are to being the backbone of what this entire country was built on. It's an aging industry, but rural America, the profitability of farmers and ranchers, I mean, it's got to be our focus in all of this and telling our story and letting people realize, I still contest, the day that we can't feed our country is the day that America is not a superpower anymore. And that sounds like just a phrase, but on the path that we're headed, it's sooner than later, and it's scary.
Well, thank you very much.
Absolutely.
We love feedback. I can be reached at ryan@calcattle.org. We always take images of all of our visits. To see them, you can follow us on Instagram at @calcattlecountry. We also post the photos on the Cattle Council website, which is www.calcattlecouncil.org. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Thank you for listening.